The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy. And it is a very busy Wednesday here. We got a lot to talk about. We are at the midseason point in the NFL. So, of course, that means a lot of publications, including ESPN, putting out various grades on where the teams are, where the new head coaches are, kind of just looking back and looking forward simultaneously. So I'm going to talk about that. I'm also going to talk about the Yotes and the Suns, two teams that I think, I think for the Coyotes, we're anticipating them to be quite good. The Suns, I don't think anybody really saw this coming. With a 5-2 record, I thought they'd be improved, but not to the level of where they would be. We're going to talk to Gina Mizell of The Athletic AZ about that and just the hot start, the 5-2 start, and where they can grow from here. We're also going to hear from J.D. Johnson, pinnacle quarterback and Michigan commit. He is sticking with Michigan, but has had an interesting couple of weeks. He had a heart procedure earlier in his life, and after the Michigan doctors took a look at it, they deemed that it would be the frequency with which, or the chances that something could happen with him playing for them and taking a hit to the chest was low, but it would be catastrophic. So they have, he medically retired from football. He's no longer playing with Pinnacle. He's not going to be playing football at Michigan, but they honored his scholarship. He's still going to be a Michigan man still. And Coach Harbaugh has offered to, have him on the coaching staff as an analyst and, staying close to the game. So he came in studio, talked to Brad Sesmat about that, story and what he plans now to do. And he also previewed a little bit of the high school football playoffs. He's played a lot of these teams and the knows the quarterbacks involved in this very well. So we're going to get to that as well. But a lot to get to. Let's just jump right in. This is your rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. So the Coyotes win another game here. And just how different does it feel? This was kind of just the ragtag group. They were so beat up last year. And a team that, seemingly just like overcame the odds because it felt like they were down to, their fourth or fifth options in some positions. Just everybody was getting beat up and they were this close to making the postseason. You add Phil Kessel, a veteran scoring presence, and he's been as advertised. He's been incredibly good so far this year, and the Coyotes are continuing to really play well, have a couple of games up in Canada. So great to see how they've got off to a hot start, as well as the Phoenix Suns in that 5-2 record, as we mentioned earlier. You have it's just such a – how many times last year did I say, get Devin Booker a point guard? And this is what it looks like when you have a point guard and a coach that wasn't from the bargain bin. Like it seemed more simple than it really was. Like you didn't need to overcomplicate things. Find a guy that can, get the ball to the various playmakers on this Suns team and then play some defense and have a coach that is having guys buy in. And that's exactly what's happening right now for these 5-2 Suns. Devin Booker looks like not a completely different player, but an enhanced player. He is a guy that's not – he's being incredibly efficient. And I think that's what's most promising with this start is he was 15-for-19, in their last game. And really just took care of the basketball great. Ricky Rubio has provided that defense, and they're winning close games. They beat an undefeated Sixers team. And Devin Booker, isn't trying to go get his. And I think a lot of people kind of gave him that reputation in the first few years of his career because there was no one around him. If he wasn't going to try to score, then who was? A bunch of guys that probably should have been in the G League or retired, like quite frankly. That's kind of where that team was over the past couple of years. But this year, they have real NBA talent around him. You see him distributing, you see him scoring at an efficient rate, and you see him already playing well with Ricky Rubio. So, and one thing that jumped out to me, and we're going to talk to Gina about this, the leading rebounder for the Phoenix Suns, who would you think it would be? Aaron Baines, maybe, you know, Mikal Bridges, potentially Kelly Oubre Jr. It's Ricky Rubio. That is a very interesting stat. Granted, 7 games in, but very interesting. So looking forward to talking to Gina more about the Suns and kind of where they're going from here. So with the Arizona Cardinals, ESPN has put out a couple of different basically publications of, you know, kind of first half grades for the team, first half grades for first year coaches. And kind of with the Cardinals, the assessment done by Josh Weinfuss, who does a very good job for the Arizona Cardinals. He said his first half in 2 words, offensive inconsistency. The Cardinals started 0-3-1 and then 1-3 straight throughout it all. The offense that Coach Kliff Kingsbury hoped to run has been up and down. He's been creative, but as good as the offense looks at times, it's equally bad at others. I feel like we're starting to see it more frequently of good than bad, which is always a promising side that you get better as the year goes on. And I think that's one of the reasons Steve Wilks isn't here. The team never necessarily improved last year. Like, yes, they were, that roster was rough. And yes, Josh Rosen was thrown into a system where he was not going to thrive and he barely was going to survive. But that team never showed any signs of life or improvement, despite having some of the key players that are here now doing pretty darn well, including the first half MVP that Josh tabbed in Chandler Jones. And he's third in the NFL in sacks at 9.5 and has been a dominant force each week. Done a very good job so far. But again, when you look at the schedule moving forward for them is going to be pretty tough. In their final 8 games, they're playing 5 games against the NFC West. And if you didn't know, the NFC West is pretty darn good. I think at best, maybe they steal a game from the Rams if they take away one of those games. But I could see them going 0-6 against the NFC West this year. You look at the rest of the schedule, the Steelers, you know, very, very average. They've had their fair share of injuries as well. The Browns, I think you can get a win there this week against the Buccaneers. That could be a toss-up game potentially. I think going into that, the Cardinals should be feeling pretty good. But like we've seen what Josh wrote, it's been pretty up and down. So you could see them come out a little bit flat against their old head coach. Then things struggle. But I think you're looking at about a 6-win team so far and a pick 6 away from a 7-win team. And I think if you would have gone in this season and said 6-9-1 team for Kliff Kingsbury, for Kyler Murray playing virtually the entire year, you know, I think Cardinals fans would be pretty excited about that. A lot of work to get going. As I said, the NFC West is brutal. So they're going to have to certainly climb the ladder a little bit to try to take out some of those teams. But you can start to see that improvement. You can start to see the bricks being laid a little bit. And again, this is something, you know, when Steve Keim hired Kliff Kingsbury, I felt like instantly that bought him another year because, one, they're overhauling everything. They're making so many changes. And the thing is, this is, if things still went poorly, and I think, again, you go to 6 wins, you go to 7 wins after the year that they had last year, like, I think Steve Keim's job is safe. But if things go awry and they end up just being a 3-win team again, I think Steve Keim, it's kind of what the you know, politicians do when they're trying to get reelected for a second term, when the president, whoever the president may be, is trying to get a second term. A lot of times they're saying, hey, in this first term, I had to lay all the groundwork. I had to, you know, do a lot of the behind the scenes stuff to make sure that we were all ready to go. Now in the second term, we can really hit the ground running and build on top of this. So I think, again, Kliff Kingsbury, I think, has been a good hire so far. A lot can change really quickly in the NFL. But it'll be interesting to see just how they navigate not only the rest of this year, but then the next offseason and that sort of thing. Right now, I would think they're still in the range of a top 10 to top 15 pick. If you don't use that top 10 to top 15 pick on an offensive lineman, a defensive lineman, maybe a wide receiver, but especially an offensive lineman and defensive lineman, you're doing it wrong. I'll put it that way. So, yeah, just a lot going on here. Real quick before we get out of here, and then we'll be talking to Gina Mizell. College football playoff first rankings came out. Number one, Ohio State. Number two, LSU. Number four, three, Alabama. Number four, Penn State. Number five, Clemson. Number six, Georgia. I think the biggest question is Clemson. What's going on with them? And look, they haven't played that great of a schedule so far. I think Ohio State is right where they should be. LSU is right where they should be. Penn State, a bit of a surprise, and Alabama hasn't played a ton, but I think they're just kind of getting that off of reputation. And, based on what we heard from the committee after this announcement, it was Alabama just passes the eye test. And there are certain teams you can just do the eye test with and know, like, okay, they're a top five team. Alabama has that reputation. They're going to get that benefit of the doubt. Even if they may not have the resume this year, they're going to be playing LSU this week. So all of a sudden, they're going to have a pretty solid resume if they get that win. Now, if they don't get that win, I think everyone upset about Clemson, all of a sudden, you're good. Clemson takes care of their job. I think they're in no problem. When you have two teams going head-to-head in the playoff already, obviously, one of them is going to get knocked down a little bit, but I also see a potential where a couple of these other teams just stumble along the way. So Clemson takes care of what they need to at five. The first week that they're releasing these playoff rankings, I think they'll be just fine. Coming up next, we have Gina Mizell of The Athletic. Does a great job covering the Suns. That's coming up next on the Brad Sussmat Show. The Phoenix Suns are 5-2, and plenty of changes, plenty of things to break down, so we wanted to bring in Gina Mizell of The Athletic. Does a great job covering the Suns. Gina, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, no problem, Jordy. I am fighting off my first cold of the season, so if I sound a little weird, that's why, or if I randomly sneeze, that's why, but happy to be on with you.
I feel like we're both playing a little hurt right now, so we'll both power through. So with this Suns team, the 5-2 start, obviously I think a lot of people surprised with not only that record, but the teams they've been able to beat. What surprised you the most about this team so far?
I think starting defensively, just the way that this team has really embraced that end of the floor. And I mean, you're even seeing Devin Booker really lock in on his matchup and commit to that end of the floor and really play some strong on-ball defense, which we haven't seen a ton throughout his early NBA career. And I think a lot of that is because he's been asked to do so much on the other end of the floor and just to be the complete centerpiece of this team. So I'll start with that. But even just on a broader scale, just the way that this group has sort of come together so quickly. I mean, there are so many new players on this roster, obviously a brand new coaching staff led by Monty Williams. And just, I think we all sort of expected, even if, like, I was in the camp that I thought this team was going to be a lot better this year, but I thought it was going to take perhaps a little bit more time to gel and to get chemistry and to just, get comfortable with both systems on each end of the floor. But the way they've come out and just really fought and competed and played good defense and gotten enough on offense to, like you said, not just win 5 out of 7 games, but beat the teams that they have and, be right there with teams like Denver and Utah, which they lost to by 1 point. So, yeah, just the fact that they've come together this quickly and really embraced the defensive end of the floor, I think, are the two things that have surprised me the most so far.
You mentioned Monty Williams. What is it about his style, his attitude, that it seems like players are resonating to?
Yeah, I think he just has this presence about him where even when we talk to him, for 10 minutes after practice or after a game or whatnot, he's very calm in the way he speaks, but that, like, all of his words are very purposeful. And, he throws out some philosophies and some, core values and catchphrases, and that can seem sort of hokey sometimes, I think, with coaches. But the way that he approaches it, I think it's a really good foundational kind of tool or foundational philosophy for his program. So, players definitely are buying into that, and just the way he approaches things with those guys in practice. Kelly Oubre told me a story during the preseason that you know, there was a time during a scrimmage where he kind of got frustrated and got on the quote-unquote refs in the scrimmage, and rather than Monty, you know, kind of calling him out in the middle of practice, sort of slept on it and approached him privately the next day to talk about it. And he's like, you know, that's the type of thing that, you know, earns a lot of respect with players. So, no, I think just, you know, the person that he is, the way he leads, the way that he approaches every day with the players, I think has already paid dividends. And I think they're really buying in. And you see it just based on the way that they play and the way that they've, you know, gone about the early start of the season, that they believe in what he's doing. And obviously the results are showing so far. So, yeah, it's been really interesting to watch what he's been able to do.
Looking at this team's stat sheet, it wasn't surprising to see Ricky Rubio leading the team in assists, leading the team in steals. Mm-hmm. But I found it very surprising he's leading the team in rebounds. Just what sort of presence has he been able to bring and do kind of the little things that maybe people weren't expecting him to do coming into Phoenix?
Yeah, I mean, he's flirted with triple-doubles a couple of times this season already. And you know, they're not, like, extravagant triple-doubles. They're kind of on the, you know, 10-10-10 type mm-hmm. of area. But like you said, that's showing that he can contribute in a lot of different ways. And that's something, you know, this team was a bad rebounding team last year. And you know, they were undersized at that four spot for a lot of the season, which is a big contributor why. But, you know, when your guards can get after it and go get rebounds or, you know, keep possessions alive or you follow your shot and can, like I said, keep it going, get it a fresh 14 seconds. That's a big deal. So, no, Ricky Rubio has made a huge impact in a lot of different ways. Again, like you said, his assist numbers, his scoring, his perimeter defense. He shot the ball pretty well against Philadelphia, which has always been the knock against his game. And then his leadership as well. He's a lot like Monty in that he's very calm. He's, you know, not boisterous, but he's a guy that other players respect just because of his longevity in the NBA, the way he's been able to conduct himself throughout his career. So, you know, he's kind of the perfect guy to run that point guard spot just because of what he brings to the table in a variety of ways, and then also just the leadership and kind of mentorship he brings as well.
Talking to Gina Mizell, Suns reporter for The Athletic. So one of the players that I've been getting a tough gauge on kind of where he fits into this Monty Williams system is Mikal Bridges. And, you know, in his second year, I feel like a lot of people coming in thought he would be a big part of where they are. At least seven games in, that doesn't seem to be really the case. Where do you think he fits into this puzzle with Monty Williams?
Yeah, that's kind of been I'm right with you that I think it's kind of been the most confusing part of the rotation, I guess you could say, so far. And you know, I asked Monty Williams about it before, I believe it was the Golden State game last week, and sort of just said, hey, is he sort of finding his way a little bit? And he said yes, but it's still a small sample size. And I think we've seen the last two games that he's really had a much bigger impact, both in Memphis and in the game against Philadelphia, where he's, you know, jumping passing lanes and getting steals. He's getting rebounds. He's finishing at the basket. His three-point shooting is still not where it was last season. But you can kind of start to see it come around. And I asked Mikal after the Memphis game, like, hey, how much better did this feel tonight? And he admitted that he was kind of overthinking things a little bit and that he was a little hesitant or a little confused about exactly where he fit in, but that he had recently had a talk with Monty and that they'd sort of, you know, cleared things up and got some encouragement. And just, you know, I think that helped the last couple of games. So, yeah, it's still sort of figuring out where he fits in, and that wing rotation is interesting with Oubre as a starter. Obviously Cam Johnson is a guy, a rookie who can, you know, wants to get playing time early on and can really shoot the ball. And just, you know, with DeAndre Ayton out, they've had to sort of shift some things around as far as, you know, guys that would normally play the four playing the five, and that sort of creates other, you know, lineup, you know, groupings that we maybe didn't think we would see early in the season. But yeah, I think, again, small sample size for Bridges. I think he's aware of that. It hasn't maybe gone as well as anybody hoped so far, but I'm wondering if these last couple of games maybe are sort of a turning point for him as far as finding his way and, you know, sort of figuring out his niche on this team.
We've talked a lot of the good for the Suns so far, but I know it's a very small sample size, but where do you think this team needs to improve or areas they need to address to make sure they're maintaining something similar to this the rest of the way?
Yeah, I think the foul situation is something to start with, and that hasn't been quite the same issue in the last few games as it was maybe the first couple, but at one point the Suns were leading the league in fouls per game, and the free throw discrepancy was pretty wide, and I think that maybe most showed up in the Utah game that they lost by 1 point, and that game ended on a foul when Devin Booker fouled Donovan Mitchell and he hits both free throws to win the game. So that was something that, again, it's finding that balance between being feisty and being really aggressive on the defensive end, but not stepping over the line and having too much contact or committing a foul. So that's something that I think those guys are still, you know, trying to figure out. And then the other thing, which they did a great job with it on Monday, but just closing out tight games where, you know, you lose in Denver by 1 point in overtime, you lose that Utah game by 1 point. You know, those are obviously heartbreaking ways to lose. And there were some correctable mistakes in those games, whether it was late turnovers, whether it was, you know, defending and leaving somebody open, whether it was, you know, missing a shot, whether it was committing a foul. Those are all correctable things. So I think we already saw some growth in that area with how they closed out the Philadelphia game. Obviously, Devin Booker with 40 points certainly helps in that regard. But if this team's going to continue to be plucky and to be competitive and to, you know, be in these tight games, even against good competition, you got to figure out how to consistently, you know, close out those tight games. And you're not going to win all of them, of course, but, you know, that's something that you're going to be putting yourself in that situation quite a bit. Then you've got to finish the job as well.
Suns start a 5-game home stretch against Miami tomorrow. Just what do you expect Talking Stick Resort Arena to be like? What's the atmosphere going to be like after this hot start so far for the Suns?
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how it is, not just tomorrow, but, you know, through the rest of the homestand, because they've got teams like Brooklyn and Boston. The Lakers are coming to town. Trae Young and the Hawks are coming. So it's an interesting sort of slate of opponents. But I'll tell you, the atmosphere on Monday was really good. It was, you know, you could kind of see a collective fan base that's been starving for a team to cheer for, and finally they've got it, at least early on in the season. So it's kind of been steadily building throughout the season, and there were a lot of Philadelphia fans there on Monday too, which made for a fun kind of back and forth in a tight game. So yeah, I'm really interested to see what this, you know, the turnout is for the rest of this homestand, because, you know, I'm an Arizona native. I grew up in Phoenix. I know what this town is like when the Suns are good, and again, how much this fan base is starving for a good team. So, you know, maybe we're seeing the early signs of that. So, you know, so far this season, but of course the Suns need to keep winning to keep warranting that type of support. So yeah, we'll see over the next couple of weeks how it turns out.
Gina, thanks so much for the time and the insight. Get better. Okay.
All right. Thanks, you too. And yeah, look forward to talking again soon.
All right. That is Gina Mizell, Suns reporter for The Athletic. Does a tremendous job covering the team, and make sure to follow her content along with the entire catalog of The Athletic. Coming up next, we have J.D. Johnson in studio with Brad Sesmat talking about his wild couple of weeks having to medically retire from football, but his future at Michigan as well. That's all coming up next on The Brad Sesmat Show.
All right, so last week my phone starts blowing up with people texting me, poor JD, poor JD, and I didn't know what they were talking about. And these are people that follow all sports. So I'm thinking JD Martinez got traded from the Red Sox. I don't know. And then I dug around on it a little bit, and Eric and Jordan, and it was JD Johnson at Pinnacle. And he had to retire. He was done. And I think he's actually just the beginning. So I wanted to have JD come in studio, the Pinnacle High School. I'm not going to say former. That's not happening, right?
No, sir.
No. So you get the word that football is done, and this happened last week. And I want for the audience, because a wide audience that doesn't know what happened and when it started.
Yep.
So walk me through it. We've got time.
Okay.
Walk me through, when did you find out and how did it get to this point?
So it started off, actually, it's a birth defect. And I was born in Calgary, Alberta, up in Canada, and they just didn't catch it at birth. And so anyway, when we moved down to the States in about sixth grade, the first thing they do when I go to play football is they do a sports physical.
Sure.
Take your blood pressure, check everything out.
Yep.
Well, my blood pressure was 180 over 120.
Dang.
So just unreal. And they go, okay, well, we got to refer you to a cardiologist. So then I go to a cardiologist. They take my blood pressure again. It's high again. And they do an ultrasound on my heart. They look at it, right away they knew, coarctation of the aorta valve. It was 97% blocked.
You're in sixth grade.
I'm in sixth grade, yes, sir.
So you're about 12.
Yeah.
So you're 12 years of age. You get told this. You probably have to go online to Google it.
Yeah. Your
parents are like, what are we talking
about?
Yeah,
we did go online to Google it.
Which can be dangerous. You can get a rabbit hole.
Exactly. And we didn't know what we were expecting, but there were two things that they could do. They could go up and stent it. And so they put a stent up there, and then they balloon it to the size that it needs to be when I'm 12 years old. Or they could go in, cut around the side, break my ribs, and just cut it out, and then sew the two pieces together. So it's out of there. Well, we chose to do the stent because it was less invasive, and I was a very active kid back then, still am. And so I could get back into sports, football and basketball.
Mainly. Not hockey.
Not hockey, no. No.
Canadian, no hockey.
No hockey, no.
Man, you could check some people with your size. Holy cow, into the boards.
Yeah.
Or a goalie. All right, so now fast forward ahead. You go to high school. You go to Pinnacle. You start getting attention.
Yep.
This is still going on.
Yep, still going on. And I really didn't have any clue that it was going to affect me like this. I thought, you know, the doctors here, they cleared me to go with high school sports and everything like that.
No concerns.
No concerns, no.
The levels aren't up, nothing.
No, nothing. Everything was good. We went for an annual checkup every 6 months, and everything was looking good. Nothing had changed. And so then last week we took a trip up to Michigan to watch the Michigan-Notre Dame game. And my dad booked a couple appointments for me because he wanted to get some Michigan doctors looking at it just so that they were familiar with what I had. And
Michigan is where you've already committed to go.
Yes, sir.
For people that didn't know.
Yes, sir.
So you're already in line for Coach Harbaugh. You're going up there to see Michigan Notre Dame, not thinking anything.
Not thinking anything of it. Well, we knew that we were meeting with a couple doctors, but I wasn't nervous at all that anything was going to happen. So we meet with the doctors. My blood pressure in Michigan was still a little high, about 140 over 75, so a little high. And then he just said, he was like, listen, like, you've had surgery on your heart. Usually, like, you're not allowed to play if you've had anything done with your heart. But it's not like a for sure deal. That's just usually like what they say. And then they're like, we're going to do a couple more tests on you. And there was a team of about seven doctors that were looking at me that were going to make the decision if I'm allowed to play up there or not.
This was on a Friday before the Michigan?
No.
Earlier in the week.
So we played Chaparral. And then that morning, Saturday morning, because they played at night, we flew up there. We stayed Sunday. We had nothing to do Sunday. And then the appointments were all on Monday.
A week ago.
Yep, a week ago. So then they said after our meetings Monday, they said, we'll call you with an answer. They met with the team doctor, the team physician, all that kind of stuff.
When they say with an answer, you're like, what are we talking about?
Yeah, and so they just said whether you're going to be able to play or not just because, yeah. So anyway, 2:30 on Tuesday, they called us and they said it's a no-go, that we're not going to allow you to play. The risk is low, but it's catastrophic. And, yeah.
Hmm. So that call comes.
Yeah.
Second opinion, third opinion. Those are the best opinions.
Yeah. Those were the best opinions. And, I mean, we didn't even think about a second opinion, and I still wanted to go to Michigan. At that time, when we got that call, we didn't know. We hadn't talked to Coach Harbaugh or Coach McDaniels about what was going on because they were in practice. But that's when later that night, Coach Harbaugh called me and my family, and he said that we're still going to honor the scholarship. You can come up here, and, you know, if you want to recruit 1 year and you want to coach 1 year, we're going to let you do what you want to do.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's unbelievable.
So in that time, JD, and I'm just trying to get specific here, in that time from that phone call at 2:30 that says you're not playing anymore or you're not going to be able to play at Michigan to that call from Coach Harbaugh, who'd you call? Who'd you talk to?
I honestly just spent a lot of time with my family, sitting on the couch, just thinking about, you know, where we were going to go from here. I didn't really call anybody. One thing I did do is I set a meeting up with Coach Zupke and Coach Brown just to tell them what was going on. And as a family, we made the decision that I wasn't going to finish out my high school career just because, I mean, it's too dangerous. And we didn't even know about the risks at the time, really. We didn't know that stuff could happen. So, set up a meeting with Coach Brown, Coach Zupke, and I spoke to the entire team, and that was super hard. So at that time, those were the only people I told. And then that's when Coach Harbaugh called us at about 5 before practice and, you know, told us that he's going to honor the scholarship. And then I told a lot more people. I called Coach Giovando, my QB coach, Coach Rob Gentile, my personal trainer, and just kind of told them what was going on.
Those calls could not have been easy.
Yeah, no, they're not fun.
Yeah.
No.
And so like that, the career ends.
Yeah.
So let's turn the page. Coach Harbaugh says, you can come to Michigan.
Yep.
You're still going to go?
Yes, sir.
And you know what you want to major in?
I don't know what I want to major in yet, but I was thinking more along the lines of business.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of business would you want to open? You haven't thought that far yet?
No, I haven't thought that far yet, no.
Yeah. I mean, you've had a life experience that you could touch a lot of people just by simply sharing your story.
Yes, sir.
And it seems like in hearing about you, watching you from a distance, that you'd be that type of person.
Yes, sir.
That's cool. Have you thought about being a broadcaster?
I haven't. No, not really.
So I'm going to throw something at you.
Okay.
And if it works, fine. If it doesn't, fine. And here's the thing, Coach Zupke. I'm not going to ask for Pinnacle State secrets. The Open Division, you've seen it. High school playoffs, seen it. You've played a lot of these teams that are going to be in the Open Division. Who has the best shot?
I mean, I definitely think Pinnacle has a really good shot, too, but I think all the teams in the Open have a good shot.
Okay. It's pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's walk through it, then. I'll get direct with you.
All right.
How does Chaparral beat Chandler?
I mean, Tommy and Jack, I mean, the whole offense is going to have to, you know, have an amazing game. They're going to have a phenomenal game plan. And Jack's going to have to play really well because that defense is tough.
Yeah. When you look at Chandler's defense, what jumps out at you?
I mean, everything from the linebackers to the D-line to the back end, they really got it everywhere.
Yeah. And you're having to run for your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jack is going to be in that space.
Yeah. But Jack can do it. He's a stud. He's a good player, and he makes good decisions.
Yeah. When you watch him and Tommy Christakos play, what makes them so good?
I mean, I think everything from chemistry, just Jack knowing where Tommy's going to be at all times. You know, when Jack gets under duress, he knows where to throw it to Tommy, whether that's high, low. You know, Tommy's making that catch. And I think that's what makes him so special.
Okay, Horizon Saguaro. Got a quarterback that Jake's out at Horizon. If you're putting your cap on as an analyst, so far you've done really well with this.
I think you got a future.
All right, Horizon Saguaro.
Saguaro's got dudes all over the field from Keely Ringo. I mean, the entire defense is good. Their quarterback, Tyler Bevert's been doing a great job. And Keely's been playing a little bit of running back, too, which is awesome to see.
Not really fair to the other team.
Yeah, it's not fair. Wow, he's a stud. And then you look at Horizon. Obviously, Jake Martinelli's out. And I don't know how that backup quarterback's doing, but they do got a stud tight end, Jay Rudolph, who's been doing awesome, committed to San Diego State. And, you know, I think they've been running the ball pretty good all season. But, yeah, they're going to have a good game plan for Saguaro.
Okay, Centennial Hamilton.
Oh, yeah, that's a good game. I honestly don't know. Both teams have good players.
I'm not asking you to pick. I'm not going to put him on a limb to pick.
Hamilton has Brennan Rice, who's been playing unreal all season, and the quarterback Nick Arvey. They've been super strong quarterback and wide receiver duo all season. And then Centennial, you know, Johnny Morris, he's the quarterback over there. He's been doing awesome. They got threats all the way downfield, and their defense is unbelievable.
Listen to you. You're just rattling this stuff off.
Yeah.
That's good. Okay. So,
South Point plays Pinnacle.
All right. You got the Pinnacle shirt on. This is a little one-sided. However, Bijan Robinson, Nathan Ransom, they've had a great season.
Yep.
I know you're going to say Pinnacle's going to win. But when you look at Sal Point, you could come up with a few nice words, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Bijan Robinson has been playing out of his mind all season, running all over the field, and so is Lathan Ranson. You know, I think he plays slot receiver for them, too, and he plays safety, and he's been doing really well also.
Yeah. Of the eight teams, if you take Pinnacle out of it, which we have to do for this conversation, who do you like?
I like Chandler. I really like Chandler. I think they got guys all over the field. I think their coaching staff is great. And they've had an unreal season this year also.
Okay. Outside of the Open Division.
Okay.
I'm not going to throw all the schools at it, but you have a team that you look at and say, man, they came this close. I either know the dudes or I played against this team. This is a team that you got to watch out for. It doesn't matter what division.
I got three teams that I'm thinking of.
Oh, I love this.
Brophy.
Got it.
Liberty and Perry. I love all three of them. I know Perry's got a stud quarterback, Chubba Purdy. He thinks
you're the greatest thing ever.
Oh, well, I think he's the greatest thing ever, too. He's been playing good all season. And then we go to Liberty. They got an amazing defense. They're just tough guys across the field, good dudes also. They play hard throughout the entire game, no matter what, if they're up or down. And then you got Brophy. Kurt Warner is coaching the quarterbacks over there. You got Matt Winter at quarterback. And they have a great team there, too. That's also they'll fight through anything.
So I think I found out your future here a little bit. I think you can do this analyst thing. It's really good. You should come back as the Open goes on and just be kind of the quarterback analyst. Yeah. I don't mind that, by the way. For Pinnacle, what do they have to do? Give me some guys that have got to show up. Yep. Obviously, one of them is going to be a quarterback now.
Devin Dampier, you know, just right off the bat, once I met him, I knew that he was an electric player, you know, with his feet and with his arm. He can sling the rock around, and when he's under duress, he can get out of the pocket. And another thing that really helps that is our offense coordinator, Coach Mike Brown. He's been doing a great job, you know, with the game plan, preparing for, you know, each individual starter. Spencer plays a little different than me. I play a little different than Devin. So he does a great job game planning around the style of the quarterback. I also think at wide receiver, Marcus and Cade Horton are going to really have to step up for him and make some big plays. And also at running back, Matthew Goodlow. He's been playing great all season. He's going to have to step up as well.
Okay, one other question. Give me a player on Pinnacle that nobody's talking about, getting no run. Nobody's talking about this kid, and they should. Doesn't matter what side of the football.
I think on the defensive side of the football, Alonzo Maya. He is a beast. He works hard in the classroom, on the field, in the weight room. He's a stud. He knows the game like the back of his hand, and he's honestly the leader of our defense.
What do you do in 5 years from now?
I don't know. I'm hoping to find that out once I get to college, you know, get a little more grasp on stuff there. Maybe become a coach or, you know, something for Coach Harbaugh.
Or a broadcaster,
yeah.
Have you processed everything?
I have. It still hasn't really hit me, like, fully yet that, you know, I'm never going to play football again. But, it's been rough.
You could go take a golf club out, though, right?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
There's other sports you can't, to be clear, there's other sports you can do.
Yes, it's the main part of it is just the contact part of it is what really had him concerned.
Come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Will you?
Oh, absolutely.
You'll break down more games? Or?
Yes, I'd love to.
All right, there's J.D. Johnson.
Appreciate Gina Mizell of The Athletic, sports reporter, or Suns reporter, I should say, for joining us, talking some Suns here early in the season. A lot of buzz around them. Also appreciate J.D. Johnson for coming in to talk with Brad Sesmat on a very tough topic. I know that we would have loved to have him come in and just preview what it's going to be like for Pinnacle moving forward and him chasing that state championship. But appreciate him and good luck to him in the future. Before we go, I just wanted to take a look at kind of ASU football and where they're at in their schedule. Still coming off that just really tough loss, two losses against Utah. I think most fans can swallow that, and then a very, very tough loss against UCLA where they just looked like they were sleepwalking. This game coming up on Saturday, I'm going to be there against USC, 1:30 kickoff. I feel like this is a fork in the road for the Sun Devils. They can take care of business and veer one way, or you know, what we've seen in the past sometimes with this program is you know, things just start to snowball a little bit, and you have you know, three losses over 4 weeks. All of a sudden, that Washington State last second win feels like it was ages ago. So I think this is a pretty darn important game for USC, because after that you go to Oregon State. And this is not the typical Oregon State doormat. And especially late in the year in Corvallis, those games are always a little bit weird. You know, just weird things kind of happen. You know, the Beavers able to hang around usually longer than anticipated. And sometimes it's just a grind them out game. Then you just host ho-hum the number 7 team in the country in Oregon, and then a rivalry game. So I think this is a big week for the Sun Devils to build off of. If they get that W, take care of business. They're a point and a half favorite, I think I saw. And then you go to Oregon State, try to do the exact same thing there, and then you have two pretty darn big games at the end of the year. But you lose that game, all of a sudden the it feels like the season's kind of going a little bit sideways. And again, this is a young team. I think this team's best days are ahead of it because there is so much youth within that team and talent there that just – again, I seems like I, every time we talk about ASU, I bring up, you know, it's going to be up and down because you're playing so many freshmen, you're playing so many sophomores, and that's just going to happen. And the only way to combat that is to experience things, experience Pac-12 play, experience big-time college football, and then use it to your advantage later in life. We'll see how they respond and if they come out hot on Saturday because they, I think they thought they were going to waltz in to UCLA and just – dominate, and that the exact opposite happened, and they were able to make it look like a somewhat competitive game, a 42-32 loss, but it was the Bruins just taking it to them for the entire game. So once again, thanks to Gina Mizell, thanks to JD Johnson for joining us. I'm Jordan Hamm, and this is the Brad Sussman Show.